Okay, good morning again to each and every one of you as we continue with our subject right from the Bible all the way through. Last week we took and looked at lesson one about the Bible. And as Jim mentioned, we'd like to take a look at God a little bit today. And also, Lord willing, next week there. Somebody else will be doing that. We're going to be out of town, but there's two parts to this part of it here. So he had the Bible, as Chris introduced that last week a little bit to us. And the Bible is the writings. And then we have God, and he's the writer. And so it makes kind of a nice thing together. The Bible on one side, this little book here, and it can be, I was going to bring, and I forgot about it, one of the big, big family Bibles. Some of you have that. We happen to have a couple. One that's real big, fat, and huge, and then others a little bit smaller. They condensed it a little bit. Even down to the little small. I got a little small one, and I know there's others out there that have an even smaller. Yeah, so it comes in all kinds of sizes, but the content remains the same. And so while the size varies, the contents is the same. That's the writings, and that's on the one hand, and then there's God on the other hand. And I was thinking about that advertisement for the NFL football where the two helmets come crashing together. Well, these two don't do that. They don't come crashing together, but they're in tremendous harmony because it's God's personal message to each and every one of us as he reveals things about himself especially. And so we have the Bible. The writings are those things that he has decided to put there, and he's the writer of the Bible. He talked a little bit about how it came about, and there's complete studies with regards to that you can do. That there's more things that you can add to that. I have, and we did look at this at one time, the birth of the Bible. And this is where it came from, this particular book. And so this whole thing is pretty well, I think that's, there's two books in there, I'm sorry. It would be that much. So that much is all devoted to how the Bible came about. So there's quite a bit of material just in how we got the Bible. But there's also some other things out there, and one of the things that they recommended, and I remember having, is this book here about Josh McDowell. Some of you may have known and heard of him. I haven't heard of him recently, but this is his second work, Volume 2. And I don't know if this includes everything that was in his first work, plus new things, or this is all a new whole work, and this other thing includes even more things, but if that's the case, there's quite a bit of information in here. And if you want some heavy reading, this is some pretty heavy reading, but this talks about the evidence that demands a verdict. And one of the things that he talks about here is this documentary hypothesis, and a big 10-cylinder word, but what does it mean? Using literary criticism as its basis for the argument, this hypothesis sets forth the idea that the Pentateuch, that is Genesis to Deuteronomy, was not written by Moses, as the Bible claims, but was completed years after Moses died. That's one of the things that he brings out. And that was developed in 1895. That's not too long ago. That's one of the things he looks at and reviews. There's another topic about anti-supernaturalism. And this is, for our purposes, he says, we will define that as a disbelief either in God's existence or his intervention in the natural order of the universe. The basic tenets of this are we lived in a closed system. Because of that, there is no God. There is no supernatural. Miracles are not possible. And that's just the light reading about it, you know. But these are the two things that he kind of looks at in the beginning part here. And these people are not just something that happened years and years ago. These are within our, you know, recent years in 1800s, you know. And these people are intelligent people looking at the Bible and trying to discredit it very strongly. So there's some really strong arguments about there, about the Bible being true and how it was even developed, and the arguments that are against it for what it has in it. And so you need to know that these are the kind of things that may be out there that you could look at and become more familiar with. But that was lesson one, and there's, you know, tons and tons of information that you could add into that. But thinking about the Bible, The book that we're using as our reference for the material here has two statements that I'd like to read. It says, "The Bible alone has God's message for our lives today." And again, some would question that because they think it's good enough for maybe the 1700s, 1800s, but not for certainly the 90s. "But the Bible alone has God's message for our life today. The Bible alone tells us what God thinks of us and what He sees as our greatest need." And so this idea of being alone, we have the God's Word, being alone in this aspect. And then on the other side, we're about God. We have Him being alone because He was before everything was started. You can turn if you don't know, but Genesis 1:1 is where the Bible starts. And it says there, "In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth." In the beginning of what? And then it mentions this person of God. Well, before these beginnings, there was God. And so we have God alone on one side, the Bible alone on the other side, and they're not in conflict at all. They're in perfect harmony. And these are the things that we can put together and consider a little bit further. Certainly in our time frame, this is the age of information. There's tons and tons of information, as you know, being brought forth every day in all kinds of different areas, more than we can handle. And as a result of that, we find ourselves lacking. And this is our biggest problem with work today, because we get new machinery and there's so much information involving with it, it's hard to keep up to speed with the different stuff. And that's our biggest complaint, is we don't have this information, we don't have that information. And so while we have tons of information, we don't have it sometimes at our disposal. But this little book, whatever size it is, from small to the biggest, is complete. This is all that God says you needed. We know that in John there, it records the idea that He could have put a lot more into it, but He decided to give you just this much. And so it's complete at this point for us, and there's nothing more that needs to take and be added to it. This morning I'm going to deal with three questions to leave with you, and also four points as we go along here. The first question, and sometimes there may be questions in between all of this, but that's the basic outline of it. The first question I'd like to have you consider is, who is in control? Who is in control? One day I was just thinking about this material as I was reading it and doing my exercises and listening to the radio off on the side a little bit, I was thinking about this idea of control, and I heard one thing after another thing throughout the day, and I just jotted down these ideas as I went along about the different topics that were presented that day. Who's in control? We have the federal versus the state. Who's in control? Some want the jurisdiction, the state wants it, the federal government wants it. Who gets it and what and different things? The idea of the Supreme Court going back and trying cases was mentioned about the Supreme Court. So we have the Supreme Court versus everybody else. Who's in control there? We have, of course, parents versus children. Who's in control in that area? We have husband versus wife. Who's in control there? During the day they talked about, in a sense, these two terms, greed versus contentment. Who's in control there? They mentioned about how advertising is targeting children 6 to 12 years of age. Why? Because they found out they have money these days, number one. And number two, they can get the parents to spend their money, not the kids' money, the parents' money, you know. And so that's where they're targeting a lot of different things. And so this idea of greed versus contentment, who's in control? Also mentioned was this new thought of education about the service learning. It's a different way of doing some educating and training people versus the traditional methods. We have, of course, the Internet versus any other thing that's traditional against that medium. We have the President versus Congress. Who's in control there? We have the Republicans versus the Democrats. Basically, it's kind of a two-party system, although there's a lot of other parties, but down through the years, it's been the two parties, and who's in control there? We have our country versus all the other countries. We have the worker versus the boss. We have Mother Nature versus another source, and I just detest that term, Mother Nature, because of who it gives credit to. We know that there's nature. I believe in nature, of course, but the idea of a Mother Nature, and that really just upsets me the more I keep hearing that. But nonetheless, that's what the world does, is talk about this Mother Nature, and we know about that, that nature itself has the weather versus the living. We've had numerous cases of the tornadoes and the hurricanes and the floods and the mudslides and the fires, and how, who's in control in these different situations. And I'm sure you could just generate more and more on this list, but those are some of the things that I jotted down as I listened to different things on news broadcasts and different things throughout the day and throughout the week that remain. But it happens to be number 13. I didn't plan it that way, but number 13 is, who's in control? Me. Am I the person that's in control? And there's much talk about our rights that's been advocated constantly through different ways of things being brought up. And of course, we have this idea, again, that we do things that seem right to us. So we have our rights, and we also have things that seem right as we think about who's in control and the person of me. Sometimes we give up that control to somebody else because we don't want to do a particular work or a particular job, and so we turn over that control until we don't like what they're doing or until we want something else out of it, and we want that control back. And so that's sort of sometimes how things work. But who is in control? There were some suggestions there, but a common perception by many people is the ones that are in control are those that have money. And there is some truth into that for right now, but again, that's not the final thought on that particular picture there. But who's in control? Well, as we go back to the beginning of time and think about this person of God, one of the things that you need to realize is that before we were all here, he was here alone. And certainly, he was in control. Does it mean that he's not in control now? No, we'll think about that a little bit more. But that's one thing that we need to think throughout our whole time, not just for today, but who's in control? This is a constant battle that we have. The second question, what does it mean, is something I wanted to take and present to you. What does it mean? Now, if I say this word, and with regards to computers now, this word extract, how many know what that word means? Raise your hand. 2, 3, 4. Bill should be up there too. 5. So most of you don't know what that term really means with regards to computers. It's used in like vanilla extract. I wasn't thinking of that, but thinking, but that's why I said with regards to computers there. And I could ask you, how many of you really care, you know? But many times, let me just go on and finish it. Many times we use a shortened form of something to take and contain a lot more. We do that with logos and symbols. If I show you our particular symbol of a square with blue and GM in there, you know exactly what that is. And there's tons of those, and they strive to get those logos just right because they want you to, at a glance, just to remember what you're taking and seeing and all that it contains and all that it means. Now, it might mean something bad for you, but they're not hoping that that's the case. So there's logos, there's symbols, there's phrases. I was just thinking of a couple that I heard this week. It's on the tip of my tongue, you know. That has a whole lot more into it besides just that little bit. Or it bit the dust. But thinking about some foreign person coming over and trying to figure out what we're talking about, they're lost, you know. So some of these phrases have a lot more things in them, but we've reduced it just to a couple things, and it means a great deal to us. So we can even get down to the idea of a word, and it has a certain amount of meaning to it, besides just having the word itself. For instance, on this word extract, with regards to computers, this is what it means. that you expand zip files to their normal size and copy them to a location outside the zip file. Now you say, okay, well, yeah, I got that. Maybe that's true, but again, I don't care, you know. It's, what does that mean, you know? Well, first of all, I want you to notice that that word extract means something more than just a pretty word. It's just one word. There's something else behind there. And I've given you the meaning, number two, but in a lot of cases you don't care because you don't care about computers and what this pertains to. But if I give you the meaning and give you some understanding and try to explain it and begin trying to teach you about that, then you maybe have some appreciation for it. You might say, well, that might be helpful to me now that I have that information, or I still don't care. But having an understanding helps with that meaning of the word, and it takes on more. So when we say this word, God, what does that mean? God encompasses a great deal more, and so using that word of extract, even if you don't understand that, which I don't care if you do it not or not at this point, I just wanted to use that as an illustration, that when we're talking about God, that one word encompasses a tremendous amount of things, and we're going to try to look at just a few of them initially here. We had God in the beginning before creation alone, and only God is in control. And what does it mean by having God back then? Well, there's going to be some of the points that we're going to take a look at, the 4 points to try to start filling that picture in. But while God was alone in the beginning, while he was in complete control in the beginning, he created and started a beginning, and he extended some of the control to man. Genesis 1 and verse 26. And God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness and let him have dominion over the fish of the sea. Let him have dominion. Let him have control. And so he's extended some of his control. It's not that he's given up his control. And that's where it's hard to understand that. God's still in control of everything, but he's sort of extended it to mankind, and he allowed man to have dominion or control to some degree over some of the creation that was there. And so it's important to see of who's in control. Yeah, we are in control of many things. And that's a true statement. The trouble becomes is when we're in control of us and it gets out of hand. Why do we have to look at this person of God and the meaning of it? Well, even in the article, even in this past couple of weeks there was an article in the Buffalo Evening News about the Columbine situation there and about this one girl that said simply yes and wrote a book about that. Maybe some of you have seen it. Was on Monday, the 18th. And it's trying to take and say, well, she didn't really say this, and I don't know whether that's true or not, but they're trying to put down the fact of that never really happened and bringing to people's attentions of another girl that claimed that she cried out to the Lord as well, and she was spared. She was shot, but she wasn't killed. But again, as we look at this term of God, to me, that's what was involved here somewhat a little bit is people's definition of God. They give this other girl, this Valine Schnur, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right, by saying the fact that she says, oh my God, don't let me die. The shooter, do you believe in God? Yes. Why? Because I believe. So they're trying to say that her definition of God was important, but I'm not so sure she understood what God meant. Yes, she was crying out that expression, oh my God, is an expression of crying out to God, but it's kind of like just like one of those phrases. It contains a lot in there, but it's sort of empty. And in fact, I just saw a cartoon yesterday as I was looking through my favorite section of the paper, you know, the cartoons. I like the cartoons for a little... anyways. on Luann, in yesterday's paper there, it says, she starts off by saying, oh my God, Aaron, it's almost 6. We've been talking for 3 hours. I was wondering where everybody went there in the library. I was wondering where everybody went. I can't believe we totally lost track of the time. My parents are probably freaking, what am I going to tell them? Well, you can tell them that we got locked in the library. But that's the little cartoon. But the expression that they start with is an expression, she's crying out to God. She's using the same expression, oh my God. And it's used quite a bit. But is she really sincere about that? Or is it kind of, as the cartoon portrays it, it's just something to say, I'm in trouble. But are you really crying out to God for that help? And I sometimes question that when they take and use that particular expression that way. I'm not going to take and read the rest of this article, whether it's true or not, I don't know. But anyways, to me, again, it just seems like the world is trying to discredit Christians for their belief in God. I mean, this book that's going around, I guess it's supposed to be it's selling pretty well. And so Satan's probably using his tools to tell you and discredit it so it doesn't get the recognition that it could get and be a help to many, many people. So that's why that we have to take and consider this person of God and what it kind of means and what do we find about it from God's Word. So as we get into the study here, there's an introduction here and some points to be made that I'm going to take. These points could be put on a chart, but I'm not going to take and put them on a chart this morning. But it does go onto a chart so that you can easily look at it and compare it. But the introduction is just some questions that you might take and want to consider. Who is God? In other words, going back to the idea of the meaning. What is he like? How can we know him? Well, if there's somebody that's in the past, we would take and look at history books. And yet, I know that many people hate history, and they don't like to study history. And there is even a history channel on television right now that goes back and reviews. I don't know how their ratings do, but in most cases, most people don't like to look at history. But I'd like to tell you that this is our study to try to point out that this history that we're going through is really, really important. And it lays the foundation for all that comes through in the New Testament. So you need to see this history because it's the history that God gives from his perspective about the information that he wants to give to you. It's God the writer, and these are his writings, and they happen to be done in a format of history. And so the Bible is his story. And then this morning in the worship time, we had about his work. We're not going to consider that this morning, but it was nice in worship service to think about his work. But this morning we'd like to start to think about the Bible, trying to convey what his story is. And so we're going to try to learn about God as he presents himself from his own word that he has given to us. So it's kind of like a self-examination. Sometimes it considers what he has said. Sometimes it considers what he has done. Chris brought in the fact of God could give us an instruction book, do this and that and so forth, but he chose to take and be interactive, and that's a big popular thing nowadays. Hands-on, that term, that kind of thinking, that kind of training is pretty upfront, interactive. The idea that we can look at his nature and character as revealed through what is done and through the different events that are found in the scriptures. Why should we take and do this? Take and turn to Jeremiah chapter 9. Verse 23, Jeremiah chapter 9 and verse 23. Thus saith the Lord, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, neither let the mighty man glory in his might, let not the rich man glory in his riches, But let him that glorieth glory in this. So verse 23 kind of sets the stage about this term of glory, because sometimes that's hard to understand. But it's verse 24. But let him that glorieth glory in this, that he understandeth and knoweth me, that I am the Lord who exerciseth loving kindness, justice, and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight, saith the Lord. And so here's a little bit of a start of learning something about God. He wants us to know some things about him. And if there's any sort of pride of what we know as far as our knowledge of the different things, take pride in this, that you know me, that I am the Lord who exerciseth, and so forth. Get to take and become to know me. Some other questions you could ask, well, maybe is how great is God? How important is he? Did he have a beginning? Will he have an end? Where did he come from? What does he need? And many, many more, but these are some questions that the Firm Foundation had generated. And as I was thinking about this, again, when one of the fellows at work started talking about some of the different events that were taking place, and he says, you know, there's really something beyond us that's out there. I don't know what it is. I'm sure he's a Roman Catholic. There's something out there beyond us. I know there's got to be something there. But maybe that's as far as they get with it. There's something or someone, some kind of a force, but what we're trying to tell you this morning is there is somebody out there, and his name is God. Okay? It's not somebody or some force or something else. There is somebody out there, and his name is God. And because of that, it entails many, many, many other things. What are some of those things? Well, first of all, one of the first points is God had no beginning. He will have no end. All right? God had no beginning. He will have no end. Before anything came to be, God existed. Let's look at Psalms chapter 90. Psalms chapter 90 and verse 2. Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever thou hast formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God. And so his word that he's the writer of reveals this information to us. We wouldn't know that. And I like the way it's put. Even from everlasting to everlasting. We could say that God's eternal. What does that mean to you and I? Well, to me, a lot of times that term means from when time started in the beginning. I'm talking about our beginning, Genesis beginning, until everlasting life thereafter. Thinking of eternity, speaking in our perspective, as just being from when we knew time started, and we're going to live forever. We had a definite beginning. But with God, it's from everlasting to everlasting. So the word eternity sometimes may not include or may not give the right definition to God himself. Eternity means forever and ever. And that would include God. But this word everlasting to everlasting, there was no beginning there, and there's no ending over here, I think is a better description of his position. For us, it's eternity, because we had a beginning and we go forever and ever and ever. So just with that distinction, I think it's nice that the writer did it from everlasting to everlasting, to make sure you understood that before beginning, before time, before anything in this book, before anything happened, God was there way ahead of time. And that's hard to comprehend, but that's what his word says. So putting it in different ways, he did not have a beginning. He was not created. He has always been alive. He has always been and will always be the same. There never will be a time when God does not exist. God can never die. These are all different phrases that are saying the same thing. God is from everlasting to everlasting. So that's point number one. A little some knowledge about this person, God, and what God means by it from his word. The next the point is, God alone existed before all things, but also the fact that God is completely independent of everything and everyone. Completely independent of everything and everyone. Exodus 3:14. Exodus 3:14 says, "And God said unto Moses, I am that I am." And throughout the book of Exodus, I really enjoy Exodus because it's trying to reveal God to the people in a very real way. And so he continues on with that thought. And that phrase, "I am that I am," kind of suggests that I'm totally independent. I don't need anybody else, and I have everything. I am. Encompasses all that you might want to think about. He doesn't need the earth or anything on it. He doesn't need air to breathe. He doesn't need food to eat. He doesn't need water to drink. He doesn't need to sleep. Let's look at Psalms 121. Psalms 121 and verse 3, "He will not suffer thy foot to be moved," and it's the last part here, "He who keepeth thee will not slumber." So he doesn't need to take and sleep. God doesn't require the sleep that he needs. Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 28. Isaiah 40 and 28 says, "Hast thou not known? Hast thou not heard that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, fainteth not, neither is weary?" There is no searching of his understanding. So most of that verse might suggest that he doesn't get tired, doesn't get thirsty, doesn't get hungry, doesn't need anything. And as a result of that, he's completely independent of everything and everyone. So here's two characteristics of God: that he has no beginning, he has no ending, he needs nothing. And this begins to help define who God is. He also, for another point, is the person that knows everything. And right in that verse there that we just read, the tail end of it says, there is no searching of his understanding. You can't take and try to figure out how far he knows things and what he knows. There is no end to it. And that's hard again to take and fathom. But that's what his word says about himself. He doesn't need anybody to teach him. He knows everything. He possesses all knowledge. He's aware of everything. Psalms 147. Psalms 147, this time verse 5. "Great is our Lord, and of great power, his understanding is infinite." Great is our Lord, and of great power, his understanding is infinite. That's something about God saying in another way. His understanding isn't real small, it's infinite. Or you can't find the end of trying to search how far he knows. So it talks about his knowledge that way. Romans chapter 11 for another verse there. A couple verses. Romans chapter 11. Romans chapter 11 and verse 33 and 34. "Oh, the depth of the riches both of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. For who hath known the mind of the Lord, or who hath been his counselor? Again, talking about this person of God, and what he knows. And so these scriptures kind of point out from his own word what he's revealed about a little bit about God in this area of understanding. All of us are pretty well familiar with it when you go to a grocery store or any other kind of store, of how they take and get your ticket of what you owe done. They can scan it over a scanner. And it uses the barcode that's on almost every product. I don't know if there's anything that doesn't come with some kind of a barcode anymore. And so a bunch of lines, you know. And it really has a lot of information in it. And there's, you know, how the whole thing of how they developed that and everything. And in the beginning, we used to use them at work, and they weren't too accurate. They had a lot of problems, but of course you know that they're pretty well, I think, got a lot of the bugs out of it. But once in a while, might, you know, somebody double deals, it might give you a problem, but it's picked up on that item twice, you know. But they're pretty accurate, and they've gotten a lot of the information straightened out, I think, you know, for the most part. But you take and try to count how many lines there are. If I were to put up a bunch of lines, even just a bunch of regular lines, they vary in width. But if you put up a bunch of lines and I tell you to count how many lines there are from where you're sitting, if I put that on the screen, you'd get lost. You'd say, well, I missed it. I got to start over again. And you might come up with all kinds of different numbers. And yet this person about God knows the hair on your head. Try to count how many hairs are on your head and see if you can come up with the right number. And that's what God says about what he knows. And so this is an example of that knowledge. And as we know, it changes too. So he knows the changes that take place as well. One example of the person that we're talking about, God, and what he knows. There's a story that may come up later on with regards to the children of Israel. Moses was up into the mountain. He was getting the law. God had to take and send Moses back down. Why? Because he knew what was going on. Moses didn't know what was going on, but God knew. Who was in control? Well, the people kind of thought that Moses had lost control. They didn't know where he was. And so they took over control, and then they find themselves in a lot of trouble and make up the golden calf. But the thing that I want to present to you this morning is about what he knows and who's in control, what he decided to take and do. He was ready to take and consume those people, completely wiped them out. And yet he had made a promise to Abraham that he was going to have seed. How was he going to do that if he was going to wipe them out? I don't know. But I do believe the fact that he could have taken and done something else to continue on what his promises and carry it through, even though he completely destroyed those people. And so I thought that was really an amazing thought to think about. This person, this God, could take and do this kind of control. And this kind of knowledge, having this kind of knowledge, so it bears out a couple examples about this person of God, what he knows and what he can do and how much in control he could be or is at times. The last point that we'd like to take and talk about is God is everywhere. Where is he? The question might come up. Where has he been before everything else existed? We cannot see God, and we cannot know where he is unless he tells us. And so we have the Bible to take and help us with that. God made everything, and he is present everywhere. But then this important point, he is not in everything. And that's important because some people think that God is in everything, and he's not in everything. He made everything, and he's everywhere. But he is not in everything. Some of the other religions take and twist that and use it to their advantage for other things. Jeremiah 23. Again, back in the book of Jeremiah 23. Jeremiah 23, In verse 23, am I a God at hand, saith the Lord, and not a God afar off? Can any hide himself in secret places that I shall not see him, saith the Lord? Do not I fill heaven and earth, saith the Lord? So here's this idea about where he is at, as again explained in his word. Another one is in Proverbs chapter 15. Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 3. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good. And there's also like a portion in Psalms 139, which we won't look at today, but you can read that. Again, talking about what God knows and where he is at. Take and turn to Acts chapter 17. This will be our final portion for this morning here. We'll get to it in just a moment. As you think about being everywhere, again, that's kind of a hard concept to think about a little bit, about somebody can being in all places at one time. The closest that we can come is mentally being someplace. I can tell you right now, as you take and go over the skyway, on the right-hand side, there's a building with a blue roof on it, and then there's another one that has a gold topper on it, and then over here, so what I'm trying to say is there's a picture that I can have and convey to you that's in my mind mentally, but I'm not there. Because I've gone by it so many times, that picture is always there, and I can take and tell about it, but I can't be there while I'm here. And so mentally, for us, we can take and be a lot of different places throughout the world very quickly, but we can't even still be all places at one time, even mentally. And yet, here we have a person, God, that's everywhere all the time and in all things. And as I think about even our gathering this morning, there's a back row. And sometimes we might think of God. I was thinking about this the last few weeks, several weeks, month maybe, about God sort of being in the back row, because that would cover everywhere. But as we gather together for our worship time, it also says where two or three are gathered together, there am I in the midst. So how does he get from the back row to the midst? It's because there's a desire in our part for him to take and be there, because we want to be there, because we appreciate what he has done for us. And so we take and move him from the back row, so to speak, even though he's around us all the time, and he becomes in our midst as we focus on him, this person of God. And as I thought more about it, I said, what a blessed thought. He could stay in our back row if we so want him to be, but he could also be in our midst if we want him to be, as we focus on this person of God and the fact of thinking about who is in control. What does that term of God mean? And four aspects of it. God had no beginning. He will have no end. God needs nothing. God knows everything. And God is everywhere. There's four characteristics of God that you can learn from the Scripture, and that's only lightly touching the surface. But here's our study about from God's Word and God himself, the writer and the writings, that we can learn something about this God and appreciate the God that we have. And so I appreciated the songs we had. Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so. That's the Bible. And then the next song that Jim had there was, Oh God, You Are My God, the chorus there, and some other songs about God. And so we had a chance to think about God this morning a little bit, and I trust you continue to do so throughout the week, and just really rejoice in the person that we have and the relationship that we can have with him. I wanted to take and read just Acts 17 in closing, because it kind of summarizes the thoughts here about what we've been looking at. Acts 17 and verse 23. For as I passed by and beheld your devotions, I found an altar with this inscription: to the unknown God, whom therefore ye ignorantly worship, him declare I unto you, God who made the world and all things in it, seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands. Talking about that God in the beginning. Neither is worshipped with men's hands, as though he needeth anything. Strong portion talking about the fact that God doesn't need anything. Seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things, and hath made of one blood all nations of men to dwell on all the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation, that they should seek the Lord, if perhaps they might feel after him and find him, though he is not far from every one of us, again his presence being everywhere. For in him we live and move and have our being, as certain also as our own poets have said, for we are his offspring. For as much then as ye are the offspring of God, we ought not to think that the Godhead is like gold or silver or stone carved by art and man's devices. That's a little summary about what we've been looking at this morning. And so that's a portion you can think upon this coming week. Let's just close in a word of prayer and then you're dismissed for this morning.